18.
Well?
Corin asked Nenyim. What can you tell me? They had made 4 more jumps since Nenyim had given them the assessment of the ship's living engines, and each had been rougher than the last. The vessel's pain had gone from a pinprick to an aching throb, and Corin was happy that most of the ships he flew hadn't had feelings. Sure, it handled well, when it wasn't sick.
The deterioration is marked, Nenyim said. The Dovin basals were damaged by the Imperial ship, and the gravitic strains of repeated jumps have worsened their condition.
Why didn't you tell me this before the repeated jumps? Corin asked.
It took a few passes through dark space before I could be certain. Also, she paused and her tendrils writhed like snakes. Also, I think my coupling of a Yuuzhan Vong drive with a ship designed for an unliving drive may have been imperfect and contributed to the deterioration. The wound only hastened this. Each time we jump, microgravitic anomalies appear inside or very near the Dovin basals.
Eating them from within, Corin said. Wonderful. Can this be repaired?
For the first time since Corin had met her, Nenyim actually seemed apologetic.
No, she said, not with the resources available here. Also, it is clear that my understanding of Sikoten biology is flawed, or this would not be happening. I need more samples.
I don't think it's biology, Tahiri said. I think it's the Force.
They both turned to her. Explain, Corin said.
This ship exists in the Force, Tahiri explained. You can feel it, can't you, Corin? And the nearer we get to Sikote,
the stronger the connection becomes, he agreed. Yeah, I felt that.
It was as if the ship was eagerly returning to a long-lost family. So maybe this ship is rejecting the engines because they don't exist in the Force, and the closer we get to Zonama Sikote, the stronger that rejection becomes.
That seems unlikely, Nenyim said. The Force, whatever it may be, should not govern simple biological reactions. The links between the Sikoten ship and our engines should work.
Yet they don't, and you don't know why, Tahiri said, a little too smugly for Corin's tastes. Still, he was impressed with her reasoning.
Granted,
Nenyim reluctantly acquiesced. Tahiri leaned against the bulkhead and crossed her arms.
Look, you said it yourself. You need a guess to start from. You've been asking why Yuuzhan Vong and Sikoten and technology are so similar. Turn that around. How are they different? Because if Sikoten lifeforms exist in the Force and Yuuzhan Vong lifeforms don't, somewhere, somehow, there must be a big difference.
Nenyim's tentacles contracted, writhed briefly, and settled against her head.
It's a place to start, she admitted.
That still doesn't help us now, Corin pointed out. If we're stranded in space without any means of communication, that's going to remain speculation.
He folded his arms across his chest.
Oh, and plus, we'll die.
The engines can stand another jump, maybe 2 or 3, if we do it soon, Nenyim offered.
Corin sighed, looking at his charts, which were easily as speculative as the topic they were discussing. He suddenly, powerfully missed Mirax, Valen, and Gisela, and even that nasty father-in-law of his. In fact, it was actually kind of handy having a father-in-law who might drop in with his big red star destroyer to save the day. Wasn't likely to happen this time, though.
It's risky, he said, coming back to the moment. But I believe I could get us to the system in 1 more jump, assuming there's not an uncharted black hole in our path. But if Tahiri is right, as soon as we arrive, the engines will fail, if they don't fail during the jump.
But we'll be there, Tahiri said. And even if we can't land, Master Skywalker, Jason, and Mara can help us.
The alternative is to stay here and wait for the Dovin basals to die, or to attempt another destination, Nenyim said.
Well, maybe if we're going away from Zonama Sikote, Corin began.
Nenyim shook her head, a very human gesture. Corin wondered if she had learned the negative from being around Tahiri and him.
Even, she said, if we accept the young Jedi's idea as a working hypothesis, it would only predict the rate of deterioration to slow if we go elsewhere. The damage already done will not heal.
3 jumps, then, best case scenario?
I don't understand that phrase, but I would expect no more than 3 jumps. Fewer would be better.
Fine, Corin said. We go ahead, then. Everybody to crash couches. This could get rough.
It got rough. Even before reversion, something felt wrong, and the instant they hit normal space, the stars went out again as the ship somehow made an extra micro jump of its own. In the jolting, Corin was reminded of a stone skipping on water and hoped it was a poor analogy and they didn't keep on jumping. Existence rushed back, but there were no stars. Instead, enormous bands of roiling red and yellow filled their tumbling view. Tumbling. And falling down a gravity well, Corin realized. They were caught in the pull of a titanic planet, at least the size of Yavin 4, probably larger. The controls and the ship's feelings told him that one of the Dovin Basils was completely offline, or in shock, or dead, or whatever, which meant they weren't going to be doing any star hopping anytime soon. The other two were working, though one was fading fast.
Come on, baby,
Corin grunted, trying to get the wild spin under control and establish a stable orbit. But something was throwing everything off, and the pull was so strong. There was another pull, too. The ship felt it, felt Zonama Seacoat, and it wanted to go home. He managed to kill the tumble and roll, which made it at least possible to get their bearings. His sensors were showing another planet, this one roughly the size of Corellia, about 100,000 clicks away. And there was something else, too, something in orbit around it. A moon? They were too far away to tell.
We've got a chance, he said. If we can get close enough to Zonama Seacoat, its gravity well will have a stronger pull on us than the big planet. If the engines quit now, well, we're all going to gain some weight.
He pulled the drive levers back, and the ship throbbed in protest. The air suddenly smelled foul, like burning hair and fish oil.
Not much more,
he whispered to the ship.
But more.
The second Dovin Basil suddenly hummed awake. He could feel it like a heart near breaking, sending pulses of agony through everything else. But the ship suddenly surged forward. Then the heart did break, and the indicators went dark. Only one engine remained now.
What now?
Tahiri whispered.
Did we make it?
I don't know yet. We're right at the break point.
Maybe we should all go stand on the side of the ship nearest Zonama Seacoat, Tahiri said.
Funny,
Corin said, and without even thinking, he reached over and mussed her hair. She jerked away as if he had attacked her.
Sorry, he said.
No, it's my fault, Tahiri said, going red. It's just... She broke off helplessly.
The head, Nen Yim explained. In Domain Quad, we do not touch the head.
Corin regarded the snake-like coils on hers.
Yes, I guess not, he said.
I have to let go, he thought. Whatever she is, Tahiri isn't Anakin's little friend anymore. Of course, that happened even without Yuuzhan Vong interference. He wasn't even sure what sort of music Valin liked these days, but it probably wasn't what he remembered. Yes, when he got back from this, he was going home for a long time.
Or rather, if he got back.
He looked at the instruments.
Oh, yes, he said. We made it.
He pointed at Zonama Seacoat.
We're falling that way now.
You did it,
Tahiri said.
The ship did it, Corin replied. Of course,
what?
He flashed her a smile.
Of course, we are still falling, and while the jolt at the end won't be quite as hard, it's still going to smart.
It's always going to be something with you, isn't it? Tahiri said. You've got a Dovin Basil left.
For how long? If we can't find Luke...
I'm trying, Tahiri informed him. I've been trying since we got here, but all I can sense is that planet. It's so strong in the Force, it drowns everything else out.
I'll try to, Corin said. It may be our only hope. Shaper, if there's anything you can do for that last Dovin Basil...
I will attend to it, Nen Yim replied. They watched the moon grow. Both Jedi continued to reach out through the Force, but if Jason and the rest were there, Tahiri certainly couldn't sense them. It was like listening for a voice in a sandstorm.
Perhaps it isn't the right planet, Harar suggested.
It is the planet, the Prophet averred. The planet of prophecy. Can't you feel it?
Harar frowned.
I feel...
He snapped his head side to side.
No, nothing. This ought to be the place, Corin replied. The ship certainly thinks it is.
He checked his long-range sensors again. Whatever was orbiting the planet had moved behind the horizon now.
He wasn't sure, but the last read on it had looked suspiciously like an Imperial frigate. Luke had been escorted by an Imperial frigate, or so Kenth had told him. If he could somehow make orbit a little lower and faster than the ship, they could eventually catch it, and maybe get blasted out of space, unless he could hang some sort of sign out declaring his peaceful intentions. The imps still might shoot him down just for the fun of it. Looking at his trajectory, he suddenly realized that he didn't even have a choice.
"Ah, Sithspit," he grumbled.
"What is it?" Tahiri asked.
"Remind me to never fly a ship that has a mind of its own, especially a homesick one," Corin said. "It's got us on a landing vector."
"That is what we want, is it not?" the Prophet asked.
"Yes, but it would be nice to land near our friends," Corin replied, "especially since I've a feeling we won't be taking off again. Not in this ship."
"I suggest survival is our first priority," Yusha answered.
"Point. Okay, folks, we're about to say a close hello to Zonama Seacoat. I suggest you all strap back in. The slow part of this trip is over."
He hit the atmosphere too steeply and had to apply a hard push from the Dovin Basil to correct. The ship winced, but did its job, and they whistled down through the upper atmosphere. He felt the skin temperature climb and again cut the engine in, trying to stay above terminal velocity. Burning up would be no better than crashing. Water and jungle whipped by beneath, and Corin had to agree with Harar. It looked like any of 100 worlds, but it felt different. Tahiri was right, the force was strong here, but strange, and put up a sort of white noise he couldn't filter through. Now and then he thought he might feel Luke, but it was never more than a glimpse or a glimmer. He had more important things to worry about. The treetops were coming up fast. It was time to break for real. He engaged the Dovin Basil and felt it falter almost immediately and then kick back in. Their airspeed dropped, but not nearly quickly enough. He couldn't push the engine any harder, even if he wanted to, though. He'd diverted all its ability to cancel inertia in the cabin so he could use it to fly, and the G's were already mounting to his own tolerance level, which was pretty high. He cut the angle harder, traveling closer and closer to horizontal to the ground, wishing the Seacoat and craft had wings, so if the Dovin Basil failed entirely, he would at least have a chance. 100 meters from the ground, he still wasn't level. 50, almost there. They mowed a swath through treetops, and the Dovin Basil went suddenly offline. Unpowered, the ship was a hollow rock thrown by a giant, and without an inertial compensator, they were going to be pasted all over the inside of it.
"There's the unity we're looking for," he thought grimly. "Yuuzhan Vong and human all mixed together in one nasty..."
They hit something very hard, and then, desperately, he reached out through the force, felt Tahiri reaching out too, and then... Then he felt Seacoat, immense, powerful, and indifferent. But something happened, a connection, and they were suddenly falling like a feather for just a second. Then free fall returned. An instant later, they came to ground, hard.
"Interesting landing, Jedi Horn," Harar remarked. "How is everyone?"
Corin turned painfully in his seat to survey his companions. The return chorus assured him that everyone had made it through. Everyone but the ship, that is. The glow was going out of it, and the little voice in his head was a whisper, fading.
"Sorry," he sent through the force, "but you got us here, thank you."
Then he felt it go. He looked out through the viewport at a forested landscape.
"Well," he told the others, "we seem to be here. I suggest we see if the hatch will open and find out just what we came all this way for."